Thank you, Laurie. That was really tremendous. And before we turn it over to Dr. Jobe, it seems to me you've really identified two key points. The first one is there's not enough lawyers in the world, and the second one is there's not enough time. And so the not enough lawyers means that everything that involves a transaction involving personal information in the information age is not something that can be negotiated by a lawyer or a team of lawyers. And then the second point is that there's just not enough time for anyone to read all the privacy policies and to contemplate every kind of information transaction that they may be engaged in. So then, hence the need, as you say, for machine-readable policies. So with kind of just setting that up, we'll now go to Dr. Jobe, and after we hear from our two commentators, we'll go back to Laurie and let her have a chance to respond.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Laurie. Good afternoon. As Professor Swartz says, I'm Jenny Gove, and I'm a user experience researcher at Google. And I focus on the user experience in the product development work that I'm involved in every day there. So as such, my comments today come from a user-focused perspective. And that's why I'm delighted to be asked here today to respond to the presentation by Laurie, whose work I admire for its increasingly disciplinary nature. Laurie has a variety of projects running right now, many being worked on by PhD students and postdoc students at CMU, with a variety of specialisms. People from lots of different disciplines come into your department and work together, which I think is tremendous. Examples of this work include investigations into mechanisms that nudge users towards certain privacy or security behaviors that the users themselves have stated prefer, or to which we've found that evidence has demonstrated they're preferable from a privacy perspective. Also, investigations into users' perspectives around behavioral advertising, for instance, and Alicia McDonald's in the audience here today, and she's headed up much of that work. Academia and industry over the last few years has had to take a much more holistic view to the topic of privacy. Of course, it's an incredibly complicated subject. During my time at Google, I've been struck by how often people who care really immensely about protecting users' privacy can come to very different conclusions about the best approach when we're working internally, because we're meeting the needs of a variety of perspectives. It can be frustrating when the decision-making seemingly requires very different and sometimes mutually exclusive options to satisfy all the requirements. The newer integration and interaction of the perspectives and methods of the behavioral sciences, together with more traditional subject matters like law and policy that focus on this area, is really refreshing, however. It means that additional and new critiques can be brought into the picture that enable really meaningful progression. But let's turn to focus on the topics that Laurie's chosen to talk about today and start with nutritional labels. So nutritional labels are, I believe, a good progression in terms of transparency. They break out of the mold of excessive legalese and incomprehensibility and use the information design principles like chunking information for greater clarity of presentation, presenting information on a grid, using color to communicate distinctions in order to increase comprehension. So the first thing I'd like to ask is whether the analogy actually holds. What are the similarities that privacy policies have to nutritional labels, and what are the differences? In some way, the analogy is problematic because while organizations like the FDA have apparently been able to determine daily recommended amounts for our food types, there's no similarly recommended prescribed level for privacy. Depending on who we are, we might be wise to be more or less cautious, but hopefully our government won't be making this decision for us anytime soon. To have our own determination about how much personal information we share is a freedom that we enjoy in this country. On the other hand, what we're looking at is simply the representation of data for which there are, on the whole, objective measurements. So for the nutritional label for food, we can consider like the amount of sodium in there. For privacy policy, whether and how personal data is used. Of course, changing the informational design of privacy policies does not need to be an online-only endeavor, nor does it strictly need to apply to privacy policies only. It's just good practice to decrease the cognitive load for our users where we can, increasing the communication. In the last week, I was struck by two very different paper-based policies that came to me through the mail. One was a replacement credit card, and it came with a big, long policy, and one was with my new Target Red card. Take Target's section around their use of personal information. It says, Reasons that we can share your red card personal information. And then in a grid, it lists 6 reasons in clear English. Things like, for our marketing purposes, to offer our products and services to you. For our affiliates' everyday business purposes, information about your credit worthiness. Then there are 2 columns detailing yes or no for may target share your red card personal information and can you limit sharing. If you do want to limit sharing, and this was for affiliates to market to you, then there was a form for which I needed to provide my stamped addressed envelope if I wanted to opt out of sharing my red card personal information with non-affiliates as described previously. So you can see what they've done. They have made it way more approachable, including avoiding any text that says, including but not limited to, which always seems to me to make things quite unclear for the consumer. This refreshing clarity reminded me very much of the nutritional labels work. But there's something interesting here. When does it reflect a privacy policy, and when might it, in getting clearer, in chunking the information, become manipulable? My target red card policy was a little bit manipulable after all. I could opt out of one of the ways that the company could share my information. When I look at the privacy-focused nutritional labels in Laurie's papers, and knowing that they are intended for online scenarios, describing, for example, when things are opt-in or opt-out, for instance, they look to me like interactive elements, especially in the latest versions. But right now, they don't go that far. In other words, it would be nice if we took Target's red card privacy policy to do that opt-out of personal information sharing online via something like a nutritional label. If we travel this route, we find ourselves questioning, why have we got privacy policies separate to settings? Why aren't they, in terms of information communication, presented to the consumer in some sort of combined form? The things that you can't set are called the policy, and the things that you can are called the settings. But it's important to have both to be transparent and both be seen in context, and that means together, next to each other, for comparison and judgments to be made. We'll come back to the importance of context later, and Laurie too mentioned it in her presentation. I'll conclude my discussion of nutritional labels by stating that it's not at all easy to successfully simplify something that is really very complicated. Affordances for most privacy or policy information through iteratively developing better design don't meet with the great leaps and bounds in comprehension that we hoped for. This has been borne out in Laurie's work and also in the nutritional label work in the food world from where this analogy was taken. For example, the Food Standards Agency in Britain has moved from nutritional labeling to nutritional traffic lights, which I think we saw in the diagram there. So that's red, orange, and green. They've gone that simple. And in an effort to redesign food nutritional labeling in Europe for the first time in 10 years, this has become complex very quickly. From a Financial Times piece on the progress made last year, we learned that the effort has, and I quote, since descended into a wrestling match between industry politicians and consumer groups about the proper font size and the location on the package and what information labels should include and how far they should go in terms of interpreting nutritional information. And apparently science doesn't help either. And I quote again, Barbara Livingstone, a professor at the University of Ulster, argues that portion size is in flux and even changes depending on the context in which consumers eat, at home, for example, as against in a restaurant. And she says, I think we're only beginning to appreciate that consumers' behavior in relation to portion size is very complex. To which the article concludes that the Brussels labelers had potentially bitten off more than they could chew. So let's now turn to look at P3P. Laurie has provided a nice history of P3P for us and conveyed well its intents, its disadvantages, and its measures of success. Let's review them again. The intent with P3P was to provide technical empowerment that would increase user trust and confidence. This is by enabling people to set personal levels of sharing for privacy preferences. While the intent is sound, as Laurie herself cites, there have been many challenges, and I want to comment on a few of these. Firstly, Laurie notes that the P3P working group was closed in 2007 due to a lack of industry participation, and P3P 1.1 was never finalized. Looking back, I think we can be a bit more definitive about this. I think we can say that P3P initiative was established with a lack of participation in the first place and was never able to get off this weak foundational beginning. Secondly, in terms of process two, there are aspects to the work regarding implementation, with the implementation errors in IE that Laurie has spoken about and the similar errors that her students have made that she's reported about in a paper. It's clear that there's a vacuum. There's no real correct implementation of the specification or test for it. Thirdly, Laurie in her presentation acknowledges that social networking was not really anticipated. It's an illustration of a likely missing gap, and it begs the question, what's the next large unanticipated creation that will arise in relation to this? Fourthly, something else to acknowledge is that technical solutions to complex social problems will be tweaked to reflect the lowest common consensus around what the problem is. There was never good consensus around what the privacy problem is, and so it seems the implementation has defaulted to being the easiest way to circumvent it in some cases. Fifth, let's talk about expressiveness. A big complaint about P3P has been that it's not expressive enough. This is certainly something that many companies feel to be the case. For example, P3P doesn't fully allow them to convey different types of sharing, as Laurie explained. Developing a means for users to better understand and control their personal data is of great interest to companies like Google, but P3P does not offer an expressive enough way to do this, nor contextually relevant enough way to do this. In relation to expressiveness, some of the work of CMU team has focused on privacy needs themselves. For example, Laurie's colleague, Norman Sadar, has identified that people are happier sharing location information and will share more if they have control of a small, for example, two or three number of variables to give expressiveness to location-based information. So, for example, setting controls to share where they are, like I'd like to be able to say I'm happy to share when I'm in Berkeley, but when I go into San Francisco, I don't wish to share my information there. And also time of sharing. For example, I'm happy to set my location sharing between the hours of 9 and 5, but after 5 o'clock, I prefer not to share it. And that appears to be a more acceptable and usable approach. Similarly, we at Google have in the last couple of years focused on providing transparency through offerings like the Google Privacy Dashboard, which shows users the information that Google has about them, as well as the Ads Preferences Manager, which allows users to choose the ads they're interested in. But what's particularly challenging is to find the right levels and combinations of defaults, of ranges of privacy variability to offer, and to not offer every nuance of control. We know that the provision of too much control makes privacy management tools become overwhelming, defeating the purpose of trying to provide the control and transparency in the first place. The necessity for the user for providing personalized product-by-product control and transparency is that context matters. So sixth, relating to the need for expressiveness, we need to also acknowledge that desired privacy levels change depending on the service or third-party provider. While I might be happy giving some IP details to my favorite charity or my online healthcare provider, I might not be happy giving them to my favorite online drugstore or games provider. And users have a much higher chance of understanding privacy policies or the choices they're making in context. A fundamental issue with P3P that hasn't yet been mentioned too much is that users don't possibly have the cognitive capacity to appreciate all the different situations that they may end up setting their privacy preferences for across the board. So let me repeat that. Context is crucial in privacy. It's a point that Laurie made too, and in privacy decision making. Implicit in my definition of transparency is providing contextual awareness, and it's necessary for good decision making. So I'd like to propose that acknowledging and then building in assurances so that users have contextual awareness during privacy decision making needs to be a key criteria of the work moving forward to increase the transparency and control that users have in relation to the products they use and the data that refers to them. And lastly, I want to talk about how, while it's not expressive enough, it's also so complicated, which is a paradox that Laurie also raised. The issue from a user's perspective is complexity. You may have seen the Google video hosted on YouTube from a couple of years back, where Scott Suter from Google interviewed 50 passersby in New York Times Square and asked them, what is a browser? The results of that? Well, fewer than 8% knew what a browser was. And while this isn't exactly a scientific study, it is one of the user insight investigations that a lot of people came to know about, and maybe you viewed it too. But the more rigorous academic literature reflects this also, how basic some users' understanding of their computers and digital devices can be. And further, in more specific research, how ill-informed the conceptions of safety, privacy, and security online often are. If we think about the small icons that Laurie described, and the fact that in some studies users do not seem to have any idea what even a small set of icons mean, it's pretty concerning. So even if the icon isn't a good one, and the fact remains in some of these cases there's very few of them, and we still have difficulty in getting that communication across. And then scale to think about the enormity of the problem with what we've been trying to do with P3P. There are 6,120 resultant combinations of the P3P policy statements. It shows this is really complicated. So if we consider measures of success, while the idea and motivation of P3P has been really wholesome, the P3P protocol has not taken off and seen any real-world measures of success. Despite the genuinely good intentions, the reality has been quite disappointing. So my remaining question critically asks, who then is this for? I'd like the answer to be for the user, and specifically consumer-focused. The nutritional label work clearly seems to be grounded that way. But the P3P work, who's the P3P work potentially benefiting most currently? Is it companies? Well, in terms of wanting to provide users with increased transparency, trust, and control, that's something many companies want to do. But critics of P3P note that P3P does not prevent potential misuse of data ostensibly covered by P3P. Is it users? Well, users have to date not done well at all from P3P in terms of the original intentions. There's a lot of evidence that it's generally not adopted, and so end users can't benefit from something that's not used. A similar issue for users is the difficulty in communicating what is achieved through P3P. Evidence shows that users are often pretty misguided about privacy messages, thinking that their privacy is protected when the communication is simply trying to clarify what the state of the privacy is or what the level of privacy is, rather than provide an assurance to the user that their privacy is protected, whatever that means. It's certainly not clear at this point who wants P3P itself to exist, though there are a few primarily academic groups progressing the work and attempting to make it simpler. Yet a range of voices from the consumer advocate to the business world have been unhappy with P3P. So in the past, Epic, IBM, Mozilla have all raised concerns about it. Laurie describes the biggest issue with P3P as being lack of incentive to adopt, and we can add the further issues that she lists with the protocol to those she mentioned previously, including erroneous policies and the erroneous policy syntax. As Laurie notes, the lack of overall P3P compliance demonstrates the ineffectiveness of P3P as a self-regulatory program. After this, Laurie concludes there seems to be a clear advantage of standardized notices for consumers, but in practice, this hasn't seemed to be the case. There's evidence from controlled studies around information comprehension and retention for better informational communication. But in the real world, these things together, P3P and the clarity in policies, hasn't really made progress. And it hasn't led to user experience of people being able to better control their privacy online. So what are some of my concerns? Firstly, that there isn't so much compelling evidence that this approach works anyway, so why enforce it? And secondly, erecting barriers to services might simply backfire because it may push the bad actors out there that there are further into dark corners and will potentially breed new mechanisms for circumvention. So I have two proposals instead, and these are as follows. The first one is together academia and industry should be pursuing and pushing together for greater transparency for the end user to review and see what is actually happening with his or her data. Not an agency to audit generic practices across the board, but for the user whose subjective sense of privacy is at stake to do so. At Google, we've made progress with the development of the Google dashboard. There will be more endeavors by ourselves and by other companies in our commitment to providing users with transparency and control. It'll be an iterative process to continue to improve the user experience of privacy. It will involve improvements in context transparency and control, as well as the central one-stop place, as with the Google dashboard. A second proposal, and one that's not mutually exclusive with the first one, is to develop perhaps reputation systems. Consider how a system that allows people to rate it for trustworthiness around privacy could be useful here. For example, imagine rather than being presented with policies, the user can instead ask for recommendations about their privacy regarding specific sites through their designated experts. With reputation systems, we can imagine scenarios like subscriptions to organizations, like Berkeley, for instance, or CMU, who could advise of reputation. So to conclude, I've seen no compelling evidence that P3P is working, and while nutritional guidelines and labels show promising findings related to comprehension and retention, this hasn't been borne out so far together in the real world, either through the use of nutritional labels themselves, nor is it given support through studies on actual nutritional labeling for food, which have now taken an even more simplistic direction. So nutritional guidelines are useful, but they're not enough. Two things will lead us to a better situation. Work on providing transparency and control, and this incorporates also the nudges work that we spoke about earlier, and a focus on enabling reputation systems to be used to provide users with the ability to manage privacy on a day-to-day level. After we've worked on transparency and we've worked on control, this is the settings part of it. What we're missing in all this is a focus on privacy needs. How can we better determine transparency control? And how can we combine this with work on reputation systems to provide users with much better and more manageable user experiences around privacy than they have today?